Coming up next is Stronger Together, Shine.fm's weekly show on growing in marriage, parenting, relationships, and community. My name is Seth Towerherd. I'm the host. And if you have young kids, just wanted to give you a heads up that this one is on marriage, and it might be something that you would feel more comfortable with listening to on your own if they're with you right now. You can grab Stronger Together as a podcast by searching Shine.fm podcasts wherever you download audio, or you can watch the video of this on YouTube or on Facebook by searching Shine.fm.
Shine.fm presents Stronger Together, a show about growing in marriage, parenting, relationships, and community. Here's Seth Towerherd.
This is a show about helping you grow in marriage, parenting, relationships, and community. My guest today is actually back from the very first episode of the show. Dr. Karen Cassaday is a psychologist in the Chicago area and former TV personality on an Animal Planet show about animal hoarding. And unfortunately, if you tuned in to hear the intricacies of animal hoarding, we're not going to do that today, although it could be fascinating, but it's just not in the tagline. So marriage and therapy, we tend to think that's something you do when you've hit a rough spot, or, you know, you've been through something traumatic like death in the family and you're trying to figure things out as a couple after a major change or something like that. But I wanted to just do an episode where it's like, hey, here's the really good stuff that you can be doing. So I'm going to go ahead and just kick this off of like the marriage toolbox, you know, outside of regular counseling. One of the things I've heard from you is that 70% of like the significant conversations happen outside the marriage in a healthy marriage. I found that to be very interesting. Why is that?
Yeah, Seth, I'm glad you mentioned that. The reason for that is when we see relationships that work really well, where both people are glad to be married and other people are blessed by their marriage, including their kids, we see that they have a community around them that provides support. And they aren't just relying on their spouse for everything. And in fact, they're going against the cultural myth that says, my marriage partner should be everything to me. They should be my best friend, my best advisor, my best lover, perfect. And when someone has a good, healthy social support circle, they have support and they have other places where they can work out ideas, difficulties, issues, get perspective that helps them have a healthy view, and they can do this even though their partner might be overworked, tired, pregnant, nursing, trying to start a new business, and the load is shared.
Okay. So maybe if you're not in that situation right now, if you're kind of grinding on each other's gears a little too much in marriage, the first kind of tip in the toolbox here really is to take some of those conversations outside the marriage.
Absolutely. Yeah. Develop good friendships.
Can I throw an example out there maybe real quick?
Please.
So although I do a show on Shine.fm, my, you know, kind of primary role in life is a business owner, entrepreneur, and actually film critic as well. If you read Relevant magazine, you can check my work out there. And recently as a business owner, I had to tell a client we couldn't work with them anymore because I felt like the client had crossed the line into verbal abuse with one of my team members. And it's just like, okay, you can't act like that. And, you know, I care about my team member more than I care about this. Well, then I care about the money. And so I called one of my business mentors and I just was livid. And then that conversation didn't happen when I got home to Amanda. I wasn't just out of my mind, you know, like breathing fire. And so that's one of those things where the marriage just maybe doesn't need the pressure of that,
yes,
of my.
Absolutely. And in fact, that business mentor is in a better position to advise you and help you in that situation than your spouse is, because they have a different perspective and it's the business perspective. And what we find is you do have to have essential conversations with your spouse, but you need other resources to help you maintain a healthy marriage. And, you know, the thing that I find fascinating about this is, you know, Christ commands us to live as part of the church, as part of a community where we're loving each other and supporting each other. And that rule holds true for marriage as it does for everything else.
Okay, so let's say that I know this is maybe a little problem, and I'm just not sure where to take that, because I'm also thinking about the fact that there are less friends to go around. Like, statistically, the average adult has less friends in 2017 than the average adult had in 1980, which is less than they had, you know, in World War II era. So if I don't have those relationships already in place, how do I do that without it getting weird, without it being like, hey, can you be my new friend that I call when I'm mad at one of my clients and I have to fire them? By the way, we're with Dr. Karen Cassidy talking about the marriage toolbox. She's a therapist in the Chicago area. So what do you do if those relationships aren't in place?
Well, I think, you know, number one, you are going to have to rely on your spouse and talk to them. But I think you have to remember your husband or wife is a human being. And you have to be careful how you approach them. Because one of the biggest mistakes that happens is someone comes home and they're mad about something at work and they're expressing that anger and their partner takes it personally and they feel like you're mad at me. You're yelling about this client or you're using really harsh words. And if you don't understand that you need to be careful how you express it and you need to be generous in the way you interpret what your partner's saying, then you can get into trouble. And so one of the other tools in the toolbox is to learn that you've got to treat your spouse like you do your favorite dog. And when people have a dog, what happens is every time they see the dog, they're like, oh, I'm so glad to see you. You're so wonderful. When their dog makes a mistake, they don't blame it on the dog's personality and say you're a bad dog. They go, they're a dog. They can't help it. They pooped on the carpet. And they view the dog as a victim of circumstance as opposed to a bad person that's letting them down or a bad, you know, pet that's letting them down. And so that means when your partner's having a hard time or expressing themselves in a less than smooth manner, that you realize they have circumstances in their life that are just making it hard for them to be the most lovely person in the world. And it means that just... as for yourself, you always think in terms of its circumstances that explain my problems. You want to afford the same benefit to your spouse.
We're with Dr. Karen Cassidy talking about the marriage toolkit. She's a therapist in the Chicago area. And I guess a lot of times those kind of circumstances that are going to be particularly difficult, they probably have an expiration date, right? Because when you're saying you got to just give them the benefit of the doubt, it seems like a lot of times those difficult times come in marriage when, you know, somebody's got to like care for a parent or somebody's going back to grad school while the kids are really young and need a lot of attention, or are a little older and are in all kinds of activities and you're driving them everywhere. And at least, you know, there's an end date. So is that one of the things to keep in mind to be like a reasonable person and partner in that?
Absolutely. To realize that actually everything's temporary. And we know that people who have the view that an optimistic view of their spouse and of life, where they believe if there's hard times, I know this too shall pass. If there's good times, they aren't permanent, so I'm going to enjoy them now. And they realize that in the long run, it's all going to get better. It makes it much easier to weather the difficult time. And one of the mistakes we see people making is when they're having a tough time, they accidentally assume it's infinite and that the way they are now is the way it's always going to be. And that's why, you know, if your husband leaves the lid up on the toilet or someone never puts the toothpaste cap back on, they're thinking about it's always going to be like this and I can't take that. And so we, and in effect, we tell you to think about your partner the way God thinks about you, which is, I take you as you are. I see your limitations and your strengths, and I realize there's always a good explanation for how you are right now, and I'm not going to hold it against you or judge you.
With Dr. Karen Cassidy, this is Stronger Together, the show about growing in marriage, parenting, relationships, and community. Normally, if you're talking to a therapist, it's because you've hit a rough patch in your relationship, but we just wanted to talk about what are those things that make a marriage great. Like, instead of being reactive of like, well, if you're going through this, let's talk about the things to get you to the best possible place. So what's the next tool in the toolbox here?
Yeah, well, research actually tells us a lot about what works, and it's not what people think it is. So the first thing that I hear from clients is they say, you know, if we had more sex, we'd have a great marriage. And what we found is if you want great sex, you actually have to have a good friendship and a good level of trust. And we used to think that if you could just get your partner to do things that were pleasing to you, then somehow you'd have a great marriage, and it was all about having the perfect person.
Well, so if your spouse cooks for you unannounced once a week, you'll be happy. Something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we found actually that is not it at all. In fact, that reflects the cultural perspective that says the role of a spouse is to make me happy. And we found if you have that attitude, then you're going to be doomed. And the reason you're going to be doomed is you marry a human being who, of course, is going to disappoint you. We found, in fact, that the thing that's critical is actually to have a more true perspective of love, which is it's about what can I do to serve my spouse and how can I be a good friend and a good person to them. So we've seen that if you want to have trust in your marriage, then you have to convince your spouse that you see them for who they are, you see the good in them, you believe in the good, and you don't judge them, and you have their best interest at mind. And there's very specific ways to do that. And so we found that in marriages that are working well, there's a ratio of 20 positive events to one negative event. And everyone knows what a negative event is. It's where you feel like your partner ignores you, their voice is too sharp, they might say something critical. And the positive events are things like responding to them when they try to get your attention. So if someone makes what we call a social bid, where they're like, oh, hey, you know, look at that over there, and you just kind of grunt and ignore them or say, oh, that's silly, then you just created a negative atom bomb that went off in your relationship. So you have to show that you're interested in what they're interested in, that you're grateful for them. You have to shower your partner with affirmation. And I don't mean constantly going around saying you're beautiful or handsome. I mean noticing specific things that they do, such as, you know, thank you so much for pouring my coffee. Or I am so glad that you work so hard for our family. Or I love watching the way you play with our kids. So that you indicate to your spouse that you see who they are in your marriage and that you value it and that you consider it priceless. That's a positive moment. And then there's the other little things like holding hands, hugging, insider jokes, affectionate names. We see that when couples do that, it builds trust. And the rule we see is that you've got to do it all the time. And the mistake many people make is they say, well, they know I'm committed to them. Why do I have to say I love you so much? They've got a ring on their finger. And what we see is we need to hear that every day, just like we need to hear it from God. We need to read it in the Bible. We need to hear it in song that he loves us. We need to hear that from our spouse constantly, that I'm going to show you I love you. I'm going to say I love you. And I'm going to show you who you are matters to me and is priceless to me.
Let's say that, you know, you're listening to this and you would say, okay, you know, I've been married to 7, 14, 30 years, somewhere in there. It's a big range, right? And I'm not doing that. And it's okay. We're not going to get divorced, but it could be better. Those 20 positive interactions to one negative. How do you do that? Because I can hear maybe somebody saying, well, that does seem like a lot of work.
Yeah. Well, actually, it is a lot of work if you've slipped in your habits. One of the things we see is when people are dating, they do this. And that's one of the things that helps them fall in love. And so there's different ways to do it. One is start asking your partner questions, open-ended questions about their dreams, their day, their life. And one mistake that people make after they've been married for several years is they assume they know their partner. And they actually, I hear people say sometimes, I know my husband or my wife better than anybody else. And that's a dangerous statement to make, because we see that in couples that really enjoy being married and are blessed by their marriage, they assume something different, which is, my partner is always changing and growing like I am, and I need to keep learning what their perspective is and what their life is. So if you can't answer the question, what are my partner's hopes and dreams? What are their worst fears? Who are their closest friends? Then you need to start asking questions. Another thing you can do is you need to set a quota for yourself that every day you are going to say good things to your partner, and you're going to thank them, and you're going to tell them how lovely they are as a person, their behaviors, their appearance. And you're going to shower them with that. And I encourage people to set a quota of 20 and to try and do that. And I found that unless someone is a newlywed or about to get married, usually this is quite a challenge. And they don't realize at first what a small, low amount of praise, admiration, gratitude, and open-ended questions they're giving to their spouse.
If I can just throw in something right there. There's an app for iPhone and Android called Streaks. It's free, and it just keeps track of how many days in a row you've done something. So one of the things I'm trying to do in 2018 is just, I'm already a pretty big reader, but I want to make sure I'm reading every day. So on this app, I have to tap it every time I read for 10 minutes. So I'm reading 30 minutes a day. I'm trying to do that 7 days a week, you know, outside of the Bible, like just, you know, other reading, right? And so I have to look down at that, and at some point, you just don't want to, it's like, oh, I got 10 days into this thing. I don't want to lose. So I guess I better get this done. So the app is called Streaks, and you can download that for free if that helps you at all. You say that every marriage is going to have 6 or 7 things that are just, you're always going to bump heads on. And yep. I've been married 3 years. I can tell you a minor one for us. We know that our couch is, you know, going to wear out in the next couple of years. And I want the most gigantic reclining couch that has ever been created because I'm 6'6" and I want it to be huge. And my wife, Amanda, wants like this like 1950s mod thing. And I mean, it's funny, but in 3 years of marriage and 3 years of talking about it, neither one of us will budge an inch. It's the one thing neither one of us will budge on. So every marriage has 6 or 7 things that are just always, you're always going to have to work around, right? So can you tell me about that?
Yeah, research shows us that in terms of the areas of conflict between masters of marriage and disasters of marriage, there's the same number. And in effect, this is telling us that we sin and we've fallen short of the glory of God and we're married to humans. The difference is the people who have a happy marriage and a successful marriage is they don't take these personally and they handle them in a completely different way. So instead of thinking, my wife has no sense of fashion or of comfort, or she thinks you have no sense of aesthetics, you would think, you know, we each have different opinions and different interests in our couch, and she's worried about the appearance and the aesthetics, and I'm worried about whether or not my body will fit on it. And that doesn't make either person good or bad. And you realize this is just a difference of opinion, and you try to come up with a way to solve the problem rather than to blame the other person for not agreeing with you on it. And that makes all the difference in the world.
We're with Dr. Karen Cassaday. This is Stronger Together. It's all about growing in marriage, parenting, relationships, and community. And we're here to help you do that. Dr. Karen Cassaday is a therapist in the Chicago area. And so conflict, we've got some pretty good tools here in the marriage toolbox, which is the theme of the show. What else do we need to know about how to do this? Because one of the things that, like, I think maybe gets misapplied from the Bible of don't let the sun go down on your anger. Okay, I don't consider myself an expert on any of this, but it does seem like if you're getting home from something at 11:30 at night and somebody's upset about something and you're exhausted and you talk about it till 1:30 and you got to both work in the morning and you got to get the kids up and feed them, maybe that's like not what the Bible meant about don't let the sun go down on your anger. Actually, the sun's already down in that case. Yes. So maybe you get a hall pass.
Yeah. And I would have to say this was the advice that was given to me years ago. And I'm afraid it was the cause of many unnecessary fights. And the reason is one of the worst things you can do is to try and solve a difficult dilemma or address a tricky thing that takes a lot of empathy and energy when you're tired. And for many couples, lack of sleep is their biggest enemy in terms of managing conflict. We see that in the United States, the average adult is sleep deprived a half hour to an hour and a half every night. And we know that adults need usually between 8 and 9 hours of sleep per night.
Adults.
More than 8. Adults.
Because we normally think about this as 8 or 9 hours. That's for my 12-year-old. You know, I'm a grown-up. I got to handle my stuff. That's not the case.
Yeah, you have to resist the culture that says being busy and sleep deprived shows that you're cool and productive. And so I recommend to couples that I work with is that before you try and settle something, be well rested and make sure you guard your sleep. We know that if adults get less than 8 hours of sleep a night, they're more likely to have depression and anxiety, and that's not going to help your perspective. So I would say try to address problems when it's a good time to address them, and it's okay to wait. It might be much wiser to get some sleep. Another thing you need to do is to decide it's normal that we have conflict. And oftentimes the romantic view of love is if we really loved each other and had a high quality marriage, we'd have no conflict. And that, of course, is not true. And instead, you want to feel like we are a team working together to carry the ball down the field, which is our marriage and our family. And when one of us is weak, the other one's going to step in and help the other person. And that means if I'm tired and sleep deprived, my partner can let go of the problem, let me be well rested, and we can address it at a better time.
And it may be your job to be the one that says, okay, you seem exhausted, let's just chill on this. You know, if I can throw in one more thing that might help you out here, you know, you've got a Fitbit on right now, I've got an Apple Watch on. Obviously a lot more of us are using these mm-hmm. tools. And I only recently bought an app for like, you know, a couple bucks or whatever. I think it's called Auto Sleep, but don't quote me on that, something like that, that actually I can look at and look back at my week and realize how much I've slept, because I tend to be unrealistically optimistic on what I can accomplish in an hour, a day, a week. I'm a pretty high energy person, do a lot of stuff, and sometimes I'm way out over my skis as far as what's possible. And just in the past month, I've been looking back, and it's like when I just feel like, oh man, there's just something wrong, but I don't know what it is. I can look back at that app and I'm like, oh, I've slept 4 to 5 hours, 5 nights in a row. And, you know, I'm not a person that necessarily is like, you know, struggling with depression or anything like that. I, in that moment, am struggling with exhaustion.
Yes.
And if I go to sleep, all these problems go away.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's what we see is well-rested people are naturally more optimistic. It's easier to be empathic. It's easier to be patient. And who wouldn't want that for their marriage? Another thing that we suggest is you have to continue dating your spouse. And what do you do on dates? You do new activities and new things, and you ask questions. And you ask questions to explore their personality, their interests, their dreams. And you don't give lots of advice. And what we see happening to a lot of people when they get married is they get in a rut. They go to the same place to eat all the time, or they only go out to eat for a movie. And they only talk about the kids or work. And they stop the fun conversation in favor of just doing the chores.
The most extreme example of that I can think of, and you know, these people have been passed away for a long time, so you know, it's, I can say this, but I had a great aunt and uncle who were the most dull people I'd ever met. I think that they were like 70 by the time they were actually 37, right? And not only did they not ever do anything new, like they went on the exact same vacation every year. I mean, the exact, down to the detail. I think they left at the same time to go to the same resort every year, right?
Yeah.
The same week. But they ate the same things every week for 30 or 40 years. So like Tuesday was spaghetti night or whatever. It's like, oh my gosh, at some point, don't you just want to scream?
Yeah. And what we see is one of the things that keeps the zest in a marriage is exploring new things together. And we found that you can take a marriage where it's going well, but people feel bored, and just tell them, you've got to do a new activity that you've never done, so you're on equal footing, like you're going to go learn ballroom dancing, or you're going to go learn canasta, or I want you to go ice skating in Millennium Park in Chicago, or I want you to go take a new class and both learn how to knit. We found that that puts the spice back in the marriage and makes it fun, because you see your partner in a new light. You develop a new appreciation for them, and you also have a little teamwork around anxiety, around being a novice, and that creates closeness.
By the way, you know, one of the good things about if you're in the Shinedown FM listening area, there are those options out there. I mean, if, you know, Stronger Together was a show that aired in Montana and Idaho, I'd be like, oh boy, is there, what could I tell people to go do? I mean, Groupon, as much as people hate that because it's been, you know, they email you too much. There's so many tools online where you can find stuff that you can go do together, and everybody under the Shinedown FM like listening umbrella is within, you know, maybe at the max an hour's drive from some really interesting stuff. You just have to go grab it.
Yeah. And one thing we recommend is if your partner has a special interest, then try it out, even though you might think it's boring, because you want to share in their world and learn about it.
Actually, and you know what? Sometimes you do like wind up liking it. So, you know, my wife Amanda is a stylist for the band Skillet that, you know, you've heard on Shinedown FM, and is an artist that has sold abstract paintings for, you know, good chunks of money. And when we were dating, we went to the Art Institute in Chicago, and I was just like, the first time, I mean, I really, really hated it. Like, I just couldn't stand it. And what's funny is that eventually I got to where I really enjoyed it and understood it and feel so much richer that I understand art now, that I never would have had before. And if you would have asked me, like, when I was single before she and I were dating, you know, would you ever like that? And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
That's not my thing. But sometimes it just takes exposure. And if there's something the other person really cares about, whether it's ballroom dancing or drag racing, you might wind up liking it more than you thought. And you've just never given it a chance as long as you've been married.
Right. And actually, you bring up another tool, which is let yourself be influenced by your spouse. And we found the marriages that have the advantage are when men let their wives influence them and try out new things and take their advice. We found those marriages are much more likely to go well. Women tend to let men influence them more than men let women influence them. And I can think of an example. I recently went on vacation, and my husband and the couple we were with wanted to go hot air ballooning, which I never thought I would do. Because I treated a client who nearly died in a hot air balloon accident.
There we go. I'm not doing it.
And I went up, and it ended up being a gas. I was anxious for about 15 or 20 minutes, but then it was a peak experience. And it was a moment where I could share this with my husband, who is a thrill seeker, and be part of his world in a way that I never could have if I hadn't dared to do that. So thank you, Dan, for getting me up in a hot air balloon.
We're with Dr. Karen Cassidy, a psychologist in the Chicago area, talking about the marriage toolkit. By the way, we're wrapping up this conversation, but if you've missed any part of it and you're listening to it on Shinedown.fm, you can always search Shinedown.fm podcasts wherever you download podcasts, or you can go back and actually watch the video on Facebook or YouTube and get the whole thing. So just as we wrap up the marriage success toolkit, how do we put a cap on this whole thing? Really, it's all about understanding the great marriages and, you know, marriages that are going through a lot of strife, have the same amount of conflict, and it's all how you talk, and you can't get bored. I mean, would those be mm-hmm. the two, if we had to boil 30 minutes down to two things, is that a good summary?
Yeah, I'd say can't get bored and treat your spouse like your favorite dog.
And yeah. If you only caught the last half of the episode, now you've really got to go back there and download it.
Yeah.
By the way, if I could just give a shout out as well, Dr. Karen was also on the very first episode of Stronger Together, talking about raising resilient kids, and that one is a fantastic one to go back and grab. This is Shine.fm.
That was Stronger Together, a show about growing in marriage, parenting, relationships, and community. Subscribe to the Shine.fm podcast to catch every episode of Stronger Together, available on the iTunes podcast app and wherever podcasts are available.